and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax, crinkling rappers over here.
You've really screwed up the flow here. And thank you for listening, right?
I have no idea. You think I listened to what you're saying?
That's not right. Anyway.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. David, how you doing, aside from bothersome?
No, I'm having I had a very Merry Christmas.
That's good.
Thank God we can say Merry Christmas again.
Felt like I was holding my breath.
I know, for 8 long years.
I mean, don't get me wrong, like I would whisper it to people.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So it was very covert.
Yeah, I hope I hope our former Muslim in chief didn't hear you.
Oh boy. Jeez. I'm gonna try and stay off politics just because.
Well, yeah, I know you've been like avoiding it, which is good.
Just
so you know, Donald Trump has been at Mar-a-Lago all week saying, doesn't it feel nice to be able to say Merry Christmas again? Which no one ever stopped. Even in super liberal Los Angeles and the super liberal circles in which I traffic, no one stopped saying Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I've heard Happy Holidays. I've said Happy Holidays. Don't get me wrong. If somebody says season's greetings, don't trust them. All right? No person says that.
No, that belongs on like one of those stickers you put on a gift that says like from, like to from.
Exactly.
Yeah. Those say season's greetings. Exactly. You don't say season's greetings to people.
Season's greetings. Where does that even come from? Anyway, okay, enough of that. So,
all right, yeah, what did we say we were going to do?
All right.
You had something to, get off your chest.
So,
you had a beef.
I am really not on Twitter much these days. I'm not on Facebook much these days. So, you know, I'm not big on film Twitter anyway, but.
Mm-hmm.
It is, to me, I am occasionally on YouTube. I'll be watching a video. And then, of course, there's all these suggestions on the side. So I was watching Red Letter Media's Last Jedi review, and they did not care for it that much. They didn't dislike it. And then on the side, there's all these videos about everything wrong. Not CinemaSins. That's awful no matter what. But everything that Last Jedi got wrong and, you know, the reason it didn't work and blah, blah, blah. I was like, I don't know. I thought it did work. I'm going to click on some of these. Wow. The videos and the comments, like people just saying like Disney ruined Star Wars. I'm never seeing another Star Wars movie again, which is very cute. Come on. The person is until they're dead. But
I think there's a certain subset of Star Wars fans who won't be happy with any Star Wars movie unless they somehow find a Star Wars movie that was made in 1986.
It has to be that, right?
That's the only thing that will.
And so here's the thing. And so Star Wars, I don't like to use the word fanboy. It's dismissive, but I will trust you know what I mean. Like hardcore fans,
mm-hmm.
people that for whom this is their thing, not necessarily movies, Star Wars. Either some of them are over the moon about it, love it to a degree that I love the movie, love it to a degree that I do not. Then there are people that just absolutely hate it and say it's not true to the spirit of Star Wars and all that kind of thing. I mean, they detest this thing. And it just fascinates me. I saw the film with Josh Long, who is probably the biggest Star Wars fan I know. You know, he played Star Wars cards growing up. He could tell you the name of every droid and every ship and all that. And he and I had a similar, I think he liked it a little bit less than I did, but there were still things that we both really, really responded to. And I thought he's a fan. So why is he not having one of these extreme reactions? And the conclusion I came to is very insulting, not of Josh, but of these, of other people. Josh is a fan of film first, just as you and I are.
Mm-hmm.
I think other people are fans of Star Wars. And if a film does not fit with their idea of Star Wars or the Star Wars mythos or whatever it is, then it doesn't matter what the filmmaking is. It is subpar. The myth of Star Wars, the legacy of Star Wars is bigger than any filmmaking choice. To me, there's Rian Johnson's doing so much amazing visual stuff and such amazing character stuff. And I just, like you and I were saying last week, it was just like invigorating to like see this. I wasn't expecting this kind of thing from a Star Wars movie. And to anybody else, it's like, well, that doesn't really fit with this idea of the Force. That doesn't really fit at all. And it's just like, yeah, maybe it doesn't, except now it does, because now this is part of it. Sorry, that's the way it works. And this is now canon, and it does. And then, you know, apparently Mark Hamill had said that there are some things that happened with his character that he didn't really like, and so people are just latching onto that. Like, even Mark Hamill said, it's like, well, it's a shame he's not the writer.
Yeah, and also he's come out and clarified that those were his initial misgivings.
Yeah,
and then, but he then came to embrace it.
Yeah. It just, they just said like, oh, this person who's deeply involved. It's like, yeah, actors can bring tremendous, let's say Hamill like stuck by his statement. Actors can bring tremendous things. And by the way, his disagreement did not keep him from delivering a really great performance.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, but that's the thing is now we're getting into auteurist theory, which I don't think Star Wars people are interested in having. I don't mean to imply that I am that you and I are better than Star Wars fans. You know, just like I feel like that helped me to understand the extreme reactions one way or another. It wasn't about if the movie is good, it's about how does it fit into this larger thing that isn't just movies. It's also books, video games, whatever. And so that actually helped me understand the reactions a little bit more. Do you think I am off base?
No, I think that's exactly what it is. But I think those people are they're essentially built their fandom castle in the sky because that was always gonna, like, you're setting yourself up for disappointment there.
Yeah.
To, you know, the whole idea of this is of film as an art form is that different artists, you know, especially as in terms of a franchise, artists are going to come along and make films. Yeah. And so if you're not a fan of, if you're putting all your eggs in the basket of the thing as you have defined it, then I guess, you're just setting yourself up to be outraged.
It's to me what has always been so invigorating about the Alien series, at least through Resurrection, is that it's a new person every time. They work within the confines, but they also change them and they broaden and sometimes specify. Like, it's something that's really exciting with each new film. They do this thing. And I remember I mentioned, I think last week or the week before, that I was watching the Aliens commentary, and James Cameron said that, like, it bothered him that they just killed Hicks and Newt at the beginning of Alien 3. And he paused for a moment and he said, but you know what? I'm sure Ridley was angry at a lot of the stuff I did too.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like, so what he's ultimately saying is like, each filmmaker has to do what feels right for them.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why I wish Fox would not. I didn't see Alien Covenant. I know film Twitter is very torn on it.
Really?
Yeah. Some people think it's one of the best movies of the year and some people really hate it.
Were they going to the bathroom during that shower scene?
I don't know. I didn't see the movie.
Ugh.
But we'll get into that. Put a pin in that, because we'll come back to that in a second. But I do wish Fox would sort of get rid of this, go away from the Ridley Scott prequel like saga that it's telling, and get back to making Alien 5, Neil Blomkamp's Alien 5, that takes place after Alien Resurrection, because that would be more in keeping with the tradition, even though you're not a big Neil Blomkamp fan.
Can you imagine anything worse than him talking about Weyland Yutani? Good God.
Yeah.
That would be the most insufferable thing I've ever heard. But he is a pretty astounding visualist, and he really has a way with visual effects.
But also, Weyland Yutani doesn't exist anymore on that timeline. Remember?
It depends. It depends on which cut your watch.
Resurrection. Yeah. But no, back to the film Twitter thing. Film Twitter is not a monolith. Like,
right.
It's like, I was just thinking about this last night, because I replied to something that our friend Dave Chen was saying about Taylor Sheridan on Twitter. And I said something about like, how I don't like his movies. Yeah, I like Hell or High Water, but not the other ones that he's written or directed. And like in the corners of film Twitter where I normally exist, that is the opposite of a controversial opinion. That is like the least controversial thing you could say. And I forgot, like suddenly I had a couple of people jump in my throat. One person said that was an absurdly stupid opinion. And I forgot, like, I like to think that person's wrong about me being stupid, but that person's not wrong for liking Taylor Sheridan. It's fun that there are different film Twitters.
You didn't even say, or maybe you did, I don't know, but you didn't even say, I think he's a bad filmmaker or a bad writer. You said, I don't like him. And it's like, that's a stupid opinion.
No, I said,
that's a preference.
I said, the thing I said was of the three movies he's written, only one of them's any good. I think that's what I said.
Okay.
So it was a bit harsh.
I would say, I wouldn't say it's absurdly stupid. I would say it's a bit hyperbolic, but at the same time, it's film Twitter. What do you want?
It is fun to, realize, because then also I tweeted something today about Personal Shopper, and someone was saying that Personal Shopper was awful. And again, that's, you know, I tend to follow people who love Personal Shopper like I do.
Yeah.
So it's fun to go into the different corners of film Twitter every once in a while. I got to start with this other person. Yeah, absurdly stupid. What is the other person? Oh, someone just gave me like a quizzical emoji face. Anyway, okay, so we've talked about the Star Wars thing, and we've talked about film Twitter. What do you say we pay some bills?
Absolutely. This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated online cinema that brings its members a handpicked selection of the best independent, international, and classic films. Every day, Mubi's curators introduce a new title, and you have 30 days to watch it. That means there's always 30 wonderful films to enjoy, all for only $5.99 a month. Plus, when you use their mobile apps, you can download films to watch offline. Before I talk about some of the films that are available, I will say that Mubi is for film people. Star Wars people need not apply. But admittedly, if you did want to try Mubi, I'm sure they'd be fine with it. So currently available on Mubi is Busby Berkeley's The Gang's All Here, a giddy Technicolor song and dance extravaganza featuring Carmen Miranda, which I sometimes forget is a real person. just like you have this image, the image of like this woman with like the fruit basket, and it's like, oh, Carmen Miranda, right? That's like, Miss Butterworth or something, right? also Alan Sekulow and Noel Birch's The Forgotten Space, a fascinating documentary that is on the surface about oceanic transport and displacement, but goes much deeper into the heart of capitalism itself. So those are just two of the films that are available on Mubi right now. And there's a special offer for you, the listener of Battleship Pretension. You can try Mubi free for 1 month. Just go to Mubi.com, that's MUBI.com/battleship, that's very important, to redeem now, or you can go to battleshippretension.com and click on the Mubi ad on the left-hand side.
And I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com, which is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great, they sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day. I'm trying to think, today I was listening to, there's a music producer, mostly hip-hop producer, who's name, or at least nom de plume, is Mike Will Made It. And so his name's Mike Will.
Okay.
And he made the beat, but he's credited as Mike Will Made It.
Okay.
Anyway, so Mike Will Made It put out, as he does at the end of every year, a compilation of the sort of instrumental beats that he made for some of the biggest songs of the year. I was listening to that on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds today. They're available at a low price over at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So you want to do that. Look, Christmas 2018 is right around the corner.
Absolutely.
So go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tyler, speaking of Christmas.
Yes.
Our friend and Battleship Retention contributor, Sarah,
who just got done going through the Battleship Retention listener voted top 100 movies.
Yes.
She did it over the last year and she is done. So go back.
Yeah. You can read all those
articles.
Yeah. And she, you know, we like to, when listeners send us stuff, we like to open on air. I always feel a little bit weird about opening something from a contributor.
Yeah.
But it's, hey, it came to the PO box. It's, she likes to send us stuff at Christmas time. I'm sorry, Sarah, that we didn't get to this, before Christmas.
Yeah.
But, I didn't make it to the PO box.
You
need time.
Scissors there. You go.
Well, let's find out. As someone who bites my nails,
yeah.
It might be difficult to open this thing. I feel like I'm making headway here though.
Okay.
Yeah.
All watch right. out. Oh my gosh.
So,
okay.
There's a card which Tyler's going to open.
All right.
And I'm going to take the more fun job of opening the wrapping on this present. The wrapping has little stockings. Very cute. Very wintry. They're not specifically Christmassy. It's a Happy Holidays type of wrapping paper here.
All right. So, here's a card. And something Sarah likes to do is like, I don't know what you call it, like sew. Like she likes to sew like patterns
hand
onto
stitch. Yeah. 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 She and made us that Battleship Retention logo hand stitch that's framed in our studio here.
I appreciate that you pointed for me.
I know.
I put it there.
Even though since we moved into your new place, it's not actually it's an obscured view for me and you actually can't see it at all.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just have to assume it is there. Yes. Very nice comments here in the card. Thank you so much, Sarah. So she said, it's noted. She says, Merry Christmas. I'm sure she finally felt liberated to do so.
okay. This is very sweet. So she made us Christmas ornaments.
She made us Christmas ornaments?
Yeah.
What?
You got a rosebud sled.
I got a rosebud sled.
And I got, this is very sweet, a dog's head in memory of the late great Jack.
That's nice.
My awesome dog who passed away this past October.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you so much, Sarah. This is terrific.
Sarah, you're better than all the others. Anyway, what do I mean by that? Hey, who knows? Maybe I mean every other person. But yeah, so listeners, if you want to hear us gush over your awesome presents, well, first off, Sarah has set a pretty high bar, but that's all right. You can beat it, undoubtedly. Just buy some Criterion movies. It'll be fine, I'm sure. Actually, Twilight Time is one I'm more into these days. Yeah. They got a good collection right now.
I'm trying not to buy too many Blu-rays. I'm out of room.
I got like four for Christmas, which I was fine with. And I rarely buy them myself.
I got none for Christmas because I specifically, my wife knows that I don't want any more. We don't have enough room and I watch so much stuff on streaming anyway. But my wife got a Blu-ray for Christmas.
What'd she get?
She got Rosemary's Baby.
Hey, all right.
Because all October, when we were trying to pick scary movies to watch, every time it would come up, she'd say, why don't we have Rosemary's Baby?
There you go.
And so,
did you purchase it for her?
Yes. So next Halloween, we will have Rosemary's Baby ready to watch. I want to, normally at this point of the show, I draw your attention to what's going on the website, given that we're in between the week between Christmas and New Year's, things are a bit quiet, but I reviewed, Paul McGuigan's Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. Speaking of Criterion, Alex, in his Criterion prediction column, wrote about Ernst Lubitsch's The Shop Around the Corner, which is a wonderful movie. And
it's weird how often Alex has been right. Like, his prediction.
We talked about this.
Did we?
I think he's picking stuff that he thinks has a good... I don't think he's trying to be cunning.
No, not at all.
I think he's trying to say, like, here's stuff that is likely to make it, and let's preemptively discuss what's good about this movie and why it's important, why it belongs in the collection, which is literally one of his categories, why it belongs in the collection.
Yeah. He's not necessarily making like outlandish guesses or anything. It more has to do with like, there's a very specific type of mentality to various, distribution, companies like Shout Factory or Scream Factory, like Twilight Time, like Kino, and like Criterion. And if you kind of lock into the way they function, you can probably predict pretty well, the type of thing that if you give it enough time, they will arrive there.
It also has to do with like, if you know something has gotten like a, a recent restoration and is like has a theatrical, you can kind of narrow it down to like someone's going to put this out, like Criterion or Cinelicious or something like that. Anyway, and then the other thing that's going on the website, we're saying goodbye to Sequel Cast 2.
Yeah.
Matt is moving on to other career opportunities, and we're
greener very pastures.
Yeah, very happy for all of Matt's contributions over the years. So you'll have to deal with the forever cliffhanger of the Sequel Cast podcast stopping in the middle of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. But the last one he did was Nightmare on Elm Street 5: The Dream Child.
It's kind of where it drops off, to be honest.
I've only ever seen the first one.
Oh yeah.
But reading his description, I haven't listened to the podcast yet, but reading his description, it sounds like Dream Child was an attempt to get away from the sort of goofiness for a movie and go back to making a horror movie.
Yeah.
But then it went goofy again.
Yeah. Yeah. And also have a certain type of, a certain rock and roll, like MTV quality to it.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe that was 4. I don't recall. But anyway, like, and when I was watching that long documentary about the history of the Nightmare on Elm Street series, like around 5 is when it starts to drop off significantly.
Okay. Now, this is our first episode of 2018.
Oh yes,
which means you know it's 2017 while we're recording it. But anyway, we don't need to talk about that. We've put 2017 in the rear view, and I'm sure many of us would like to forget large portions of it.
Absolutely.
We'd have more luck doing so if we were like the characters in these movies we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about movies about amnesia.
Yeah.
Although I don't know when you did your research how literal you were, because a lot of mine are memory loss movies that aren't necessarily amnesia.
I mostly stuck with amnesia. Like, the way I look at it, memory loss, I tried to avoid stuff where it was gradual memory loss, like, for example, an Alzheimer's situation.
Sure.
Because I didn't feel like being sad for this episode. I tried to focus on, like, when large chunks are just gone rather suddenly.
Yeah.
Or somebody wakes up and they just don't remember who they are or something like that. I tried to focus on that.
Okay. Did you include, because I have a lot of, you know, textbook amnesia, but then I've also got things that are like short-term memory, like your mementos.
Sure.
On there. Yeah, and then I've also got like drug-induced memory loss, like The Hangover I put on there.
I left that out.
And then I also put on, I don't want to get into spoilers, possible faked memory loss with Mr. Arkadin.
Yeah, I do have Mr. Arkadin on here. Yeah.
Okay.
Possibly faked. It's hard to know.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but that's my
I saw it
yeah.
recently, actually.
Okay.
Rewatched. But yeah, so as you said, in a phrase that I kind of hate but kind of love, we're putting it in our rear view. but yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't remember if we've done an episode about memory before and the way it is depicted in film. There's something very exciting about film as a medium, more so than really anything else, that can tap into the way we think. You know, it could be something kind of oddly swirling and jumping from one situation to another, like, you know, Night of the Hunter, which I think really replicates the way a dream works.
Mm-hmm.
But then also there's stuff like memory. To me, one of the most fascinating depictions of this is The Limey, where it just keeps cutting back and forth. I mean, it's pretty chronological, but it keeps cutting back to like him in a plane. And you're like, what? Okay, I don't know what that is, but that's all right. It's cutting around a lot. I'm sure it'll make sense in the end. And then there's one beautiful sequence where he's talking with Leslie Ann Warren, and it's one conversation, a very linear conversation, but it's being split up in 3 different locations. And then when it is revealed that he's on, at the end of the film, he's on the plane and he's going home, and he's kind of thinking over his, rather euphemistically called, his Los Angeles adventure. And it's like, okay, that sequence makes a lot more sense now, because what he remembers is the essence of the conversation and the 3 places they were in. He doesn't remember what was said where, and it was undoubtedly like a 3 or 4 hour conversation condensed in his memory to the important things, the basics. And I remember thinking, like, that is amazing. Between stuff like that and like last year at Marienbad and just, you know, speaking of just of this very intangible quality, like there's something really exciting about the way film can replicate the way we remember or the way we think. And I think that's why amnesia movies, not that it's necessarily trying to capture that, except for something like Memento. And it's arguable how much it captures that and puts us in his shoes, but at least Nolan tries to do that. But yeah, I find these films to be, there's a lot of potential there narratively and a lot of potential visually and from end editorially.
Before we move on from the Limey, I forgot to mention a great celebrity sighting recently. Someone from the Limey.
Is it Nicky Cat?
No, it's Nicky Cat.
It's too bad.
Keep too going. Bad. This one won't take long.
Luis Guzman?
Luis Guzman.
Oh, man.
Was at the same place where I do bar trivia every Sunday.
Nice.
Where I've also seen Will Wheaton more than once. But
I can see that.
Yeah, Luis Guzman was there. He left early. His team stayed, but he left. I think he was just there to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were playing, and he was like, all right, I'm not staying for another hour and a half to do. He just left. But it reminded me of my favorite line in The Limey and one of my favorite lines in the history of cinema,
okay,
which is, you could see the sea from here if you could see it.
Yeah.
All right, so on to memory, or on to amnesia specifically. I found that so many movies that are about memory loss aren't that serious about it, unless you're talking about Alzheimer's, like there's like Away from Her,
sure,
or whatever. But if you're talking about amnesia, it's mostly used as a genre concept.
Absolutely.
Now some movies have done it well and have had, you know, had their cake and eat it too. Like The Lookout.
Sure.
Is a movie that is a crime thriller that is also about someone who suffers from spotty memory,
yeah,
because of an accident. And I think it takes his condition seriously,
yeah,
while also, but then you've also got stuff like, did you ever see the Ben Affleck vehicle Paycheck?
I did not.
Okay. So what happens in this movie is he's like a guy who does like illegal sort of like business espionage.
Okay.
But then the high concept thing is that he intentionally submits himself to, like, they give him amnesia. So he forgets what he's done for plausible deniability.
Okay.
He just like gets a paycheck at the end. But one time his paycheck comes with a bunch of clues. Because his self wanted him to figure out what he did. So he takes all the clues, you see, in the hotel room.
So he gave himself all the clues.
He gave himself all the clues. And then when he's in his hotel room, he takes them out of the package and he lays the clues out on the hotel bed in the shape of a question mark.
Oh, I was so with you until that moment.
That really happens.
That is astonishingly stupid.
It is a very stupid.
What did
movie.
The person say you were in regards to
absurdly
your,
stupid?
That is absurd. That is genuinely absurdly stupid. You should respond to that person and say, "Let me ask you this: Have you ever seen this scene in Paycheck?" Because actually, I kind of like I'm a big fan of like when someone, and this will play into a few of these movies, when someone leaves something for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Which plays into, you know, amnesia film. Also a lot of time travel, like Bill and Ted.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of that. I don't know why. I think it's just one of those, it just like pushes a button. And like, it ultimately is like, well, if I know me and it's really the only thing I know for sure, I will find this and I will respond this way.
Right.
And just approaching yourself as though you're somebody else, but you're not, is something that I love.
Which kind of happens in Total Recall.
Yep.
He leaves a message. Total Recall is on my list.
Yeah.
The Paul Verhoeven one. I never saw the PG-13 Colin Farrell.
By all accounts, everything that makes the Paul Verhoeven one fun and interesting is absent. Including... one of the things that I love about Total Recall is that, like, once the movie's over, it's like, I still don't totally know.
Right.
What the situation is. But I think one of the reasons that amnesia works so well in genre is because amnesia, when you think about it, you know, I've known people that have had cancer. I've known people that have had strokes. I know people who've had various mental illnesses. I've never known anybody who's had amnesia. I've known people who've had Alzheimer's, and of course that's a very sad thing, but this sudden, like, oh, they got hit in the head and now they don't remember it. Like, it's such
a soap opera thing.
Yeah.
Or it's so season one of 24.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember there's they had to, look, we got 24 hours to fill.
Yeah.
His wife's going to get amnesia for a few hours.
Yeah. We don't want to deal with her for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it so feels like a device, a story device, because it's such an extreme thing that if you were to put it in a straightforward drama, I feel like it would just stick out like a sore thumb. So you have to put it in, you can only really use it in genre, which is already a little bit heightened, whether it be like sci-fi or mystery. And it can also work in comedy, but that's just because not that comedy is a genre, but it's heightened already. Yeah. So I think it's okay.
Well, there's a couple of movies that are action movies that use amnesia. In the movie journal, you talked about Shane Black, mm-hmm. The Long Kiss Goodnight is an amnesia movie and a terrific one.
Yeah.
A fun one. Whereas The Bourne Identity, which is also a great, you know, all three Bourne movies, I guess, are an amnesia trilogy.
Yeah.
They're less fun, although they are good movies.
Yeah.
But they're not, like, I mean, Long Kiss Goodnight is very over the top, you know. The Bourne Identity kind of actually sort of engages with this idea of, because you were talking about the idea of someone leaving clues from themselves, because you were saying, if I know myself.
Yeah.
But the idea of The Bourne Identity is that it's almost less amnesia than it is like a reset.
Yeah.
Like, he was brainwashed.
He rebooted himself.
Yeah. So now he's gone back to the person, the good human person that he was before he was brainwashed into being a killer.
Yeah.
And it's sort of having
back morally. Back when he was just a good old Nixa boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So now he's like having to come to terms with what he's done and not feeling like that's him, you know, but also it is a part of him now because the training is still with him.
That's what I really like about that first film, especially, is that it suggests that your conscious mind is different than your instincts.
Mm-hmm.
So like there are these, I love that moment when he's in a bar and he's like, I know that guy in the corner can handle himself. I know all the exits. I don't know why I know this.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I even think like this. Says, I just know that I know it.
I know which car in the parking lot is most likely to have a gun in the glove compartment.
Yeah.
It's a diner, not a bar. Yeah. The part I remember that I like, and I know Matt Damon is like, has stuck his foot in his mouth so much that I almost feel guilty praising him, but he is a good actor.
He's a great actor.
The part in the first one, when he's like trying to sleep on the bench and the two cops try to wake him up and he takes the nightstick and knocks out both the cops. What Matt Damon does as an actor, just sort of physically like realizing what he just did, or even before that, when he speaks German to them, he suddenly like realizes he speaks German.
Yeah.
Like he plays it really well in his face.
Yeah.
It's a terrific performance. I hope Matt Damon can someday not be a, quote unquote problematic fave again, because I do like him a lot as an actor.
Here's what I'll say. Like, if he's sticking his foot in his mouth, it's different than like a Harvey Weinstein situation. It's different than somebody, it's just like, just think a bit more before you talk. Like, that's not the end of the world, but like
I think the problem is that, and people are rightfully kind of extrapolating it to like, this is what privilege does in whatever its form, because he's not only just because he's a straight white man or whatever, cishet white man, he's also wealthy and sort of removed from reality. And like, so yeah, on a case by case basis, it's like, come on, Matt Damon, get it together. But also, but in a like sort of epidemic way, it's like, this is kind of why these things get brushed under or ignored or glossed over for so long, because so many of the people who are in a position to do things about them are so clueless about them.
It's interesting to be where I am and to have heard a lot of conservative criticism of Hollywood and of actors and directors, more actors because directors aren't that visible. But, you know, George Clooney and Matt Damon are regularly targets. And it's interesting what you said, because there were commentators who would talk about Matt Damon, like he would talk about gun control. And they'd say like, yeah, I'm sure you feel like guns aren't necessary when you live behind a wall and you have armed guards and all that sort of thing. Like, none of this is going to touch you at all anyway. But the rest of us have to live out here. So like, I thought that was interesting, whether I think they have a point or not. I think they kind of do. But But one thing that was interesting, and it's just like the idea, and I'm glad you stopped yourself, because you said like, you're like, I'm reluctant to praise him because of this, but he's a good actor. Mm-hmm. There is this guy who I listened to for about 20 minutes and I was like, I can't listen to this man anymore. And he was talking about something Matt Damon had said, and it was something political. And it's like, we just don't agree with it. Whatever. That's fine. But then he's like, it was, this has been, it's like, that's where you've lost me. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? It doesn't matter what a person thinks. They could be the absolute best at what they do. And Matt Damon is up there. And to me, like, you lose credibility when you acknowledge that he's good. You're not going to call him a hack because he said these dumb things.
Right.
But to me, like, that's, we don't want to compartmentalize too much, but like, we can all say like, Chinatown's astonishing. This is a terrible thing over here.
Someone on Twitter pointed out, I'll just always say someone on Twitter, cause I can't keep track of who said what.
You're so damn popular on Twitter. I'm sure you can't keep track.
I mean, I just follow people. You could do it too.
Yeah, I'm not with you.
Pointed out that that's actually like, because there were a number of people after the Louis C.K. stuff come out, there were a number of reactions, like people saying like, yeah, he was never that funny anyway, and this person was saying like, that's absolutely actually the opposite of helpful, because part of what we need to realize is that even the people we're fans of can be bad people and can be doing awful things and have it swept under the rug because we're fans of them.
Yeah.
So there's, it doesn't help anyone to say that because you disagree with something someone did or said, or because they did or said something that's generally accepted as awful, it doesn't mean they're not good at the art. It's not excusing them.
Yeah.
It's saying, it's acknowledging the complexity of the situation.
Complexity and nuance. Like, anytime you say like, oh, I don't like this guy, so he's a hack at everything. He's a hack political thinker, so he must be a hack actor, a hacker, if you will. Uh-huh. And it's like, well, that's idiotic. And in the same way, it's like, he was never that funny. It's like, he was, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And he probably still could be, but this is still atrocious. Like, yeah, it's a phrase that my old pastor liked to use that I actually liked a lot is like living in tension, where not intention, in tension.
Yes.
And just like I can still admire this thing that this person did, but I can still absolutely condemn this other thing. And this one person was capable of both. And I have to acknowledge both at the same time. Like, that is a very difficult thing to do, because we really want to live one place or the other, because even if it's a negative place, at least we know where we are. But to be in that area, which happens when you talk about Roman Polanski or Woody Allen or any of these other people, you know, it's where we've been living for years, and it's very difficult, but it is kind of required when talking about art.
Absolutely.
Anyway, sorry, I don't remember how we... Oh, Matt Damon, that's right, and Born Identity,
yeah. So. But yeah, Long Kiss Goodnight as well is... Again, there's not as much complexity there, but it's a lot of fun. And especially when... Because she's like a housewife who...
Yeah.
She knows she has amnesia, she doesn't know who she was, and when she realizes she's really good with a knife, her first thought is, I was a chef!
Yeah. We got to do an episode about Shane Black someday.
We got to do an episode about Gina Davis.
That's
we should
true,
do a Gina
yes.
Davis profile. That would be
I
great.
I would be fine with that, yes.
Yeah. You've never seen The Accidental
you
Tourist.
You need to see The Accidental Tourist.
Yeah, that's
though.
A big
she
one.
Won an Oscar for that. So, yeah, I do think that, I mean, there are the obvious ones. I think Memento is an obvious one. Born Identity is an obvious one. I would say Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is an interesting case. And I think it definitely fits into what I was talking about, which is visualizing more so than probably any movie on my list, like visualizing memory and the erasing of it. Mm-hmm. Like the specific details of like the bookstores, it's going away. And the idea of turning, like he goes to like turn somebody around and see their face, but you can't because that memory's not there. There's no face to be seen.
Yeah.
Like I love that stuff and it's funny, but it also turns it into, it really captures the terror that can come with that. Like having these things that you know for sure being stripped away from you in that way, I guess it is not unlike an Alzheimer's film, but like, but he's doing it. He did it to himself because he thought better to have no memory of this than the memory of hurt. And it's just like, I think it's such a, it really, that film probably should have been nominated for a director. I think like that really is a directorial achievement.
Yeah, it's I hadn't thought about this. I thought about this. You haven't seen Call Me By Your Name yet?
No, I haven't.
You haven't. Okay. Weird to make the connection between the two movies, but both that movie and at least one part of Call Me By Your Name has the same message, which is that if you try to cut out the stuff that hurts, you also cut out all of the joy and experience that comes along with it.
Yeah.
I hadn't made the connection between the two movies until just now, until you said that. Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's talk about comedy.
Okay.
Cause a lot of these are comedies.
Okay.
Right.
I'm interested to see if you say like when thinking about comedy in regards to this, the first film that came to mind is one that no one gives a shit about. No one remembers, but it was very formative to me when I was young.
Huh. I probably didn't see it then.
Okay.
What is it?
It's called Clean Slate.
Oh,
with Dana Carvey.
Dana Carvey.
That's like right. There is that and another one called Opportunity Knocks. Like when they're trying to turn him into kind of a movie star, aside from Wayne's World.
Yeah.
And he was
pre-Master
of Disguise.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
What's his character's name in that?
Like some
guy pistachio,
like something that. Like that. Yeah, is it something disguisey? That's not right.
Pistachio disguisey.
That's it. Yes. You know what? I'm sure that movie is terrible, but I kind of like that.
I wonder if it's terrible or is it like a Clifford type of movie where it seems terrible, but maybe it's like a secret work of genius.
When I see that clip about the turtle guy, it does make me laugh. Because I'm a big dumb idiot. Clean Slate, he plays a private detective who has this memory issue where he basically his memory is wiped at the beginning of every day. Like he has this, it's not unlike Memento where like he's working on this case. And so every day, whatever progress he makes, he has to like make sure to like write it down so that he has all of that the next day. And it makes for some very amusing moments. But I remember thinking like, oh, what a neat idea when I was younger.
That's very similar to that. The way that memory loss works is very similar to 50 First Dates.
It is.
It's essentially the same as 50 First Dates.
Which is the fact that one's a romance where it's just like if I were to lose my memory and then somebody were to like catch me up on everything of the last 15 years of knowing Jen and I'm expected to for the rest of the day just know that and feel it. I don't think that rings true. And I know 50 First Dates is not meant to be realistic, but I feel like,
yeah,
it sounds like
I think it's sweet though.
It sounds like a real hellscape for me actually. when I think about it,
I don't know. That's one of the Adam Sandler movies I'll stand by. I feel like
it's not bad.
This is something else that's happened. Adam Sandler's made a bunch of bad movies and some people are like, Adam Sandler sucks, but no, he also made a bunch of good movies.
Yeah.
And some okay ones. And I feel like 50 First Dates is okay.
It's okay. Jen and I watched, and I remember I laughed a fair amount at it and thought it was pretty good.
It's probably a little better than Big Daddy, which has its moments.
Yeah.
It's not as good as You Don't Mess with the Zohan, which is probably the last one of his that I really liked. Although I didn't see Sandy Wexler, which I hear has moments, but is also like 2 hours and 15 minutes long or something, which is crazy.
Really?
Yeah. It's like really long. I guess Netflix, when you don't have to turn over a theater multiple times a day. Yeah. You can make a movie as long as you want, but Billy Madison will also always be. I know people. Some people like Happy Gilmore more.
I prefer Billy Madison.
Yeah, Billy Madison will always be for me.
That fucking clown that falls and is just lying there. Potentially, you think he's dead.
You find out he's not.
Later on, when he just, we haven't seen that clown. He was in one scene. We haven't seen him for easily 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And then in the midst of this song, he's just still laying there and gets up and says, "Hey kids, it's me.
I bet you thought that I was dead.
But when I fell over, I just broke my leg and got a hemorrhage in my head." those ridiculous non sequiturs that I absolutely adore.
Chris Farley making out with a giant penguin. I love Norm Macdonald as his like as Adam Sandler's friend, like realizing halfway through the movie that he's not around, that Billy's not around anymore.
Hey, Billy, Billy's in school. Yeah, that's it. It just cuts to that. There's some good stuff there.
Yeah. Let's do a Billy Madison or Billy Madison. Let's do an Adam Sandler profile episode at some point.
That sounds very depressing.
I think I've skipped most of the ones that are really bad. I saw Jack and Jill though, which is terrible.
Wow. I didn't even see Waterboy. That looked so terrible to me. All my friends saw it at the time.
It's not good. I mean, people my age really liked it at the time.
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. What about that
one? I never saw that one. Co-written by Alexander Payne.
Really? What?
Wait, now I have to double check. Please to make sure I'm up. Right.
That's very strange to me. Anyway, okay, so but no, 50 First Dates is pretty good, but it's but I remember that.
That might have been the last time that I enjoyed Dan Aykroyd in a movie, is in 50 First Dates. Oh, Bright Young Things, was that after or before?
I'd say. I think it's before, actually.
Okay. So yeah, maybe. Yes. Alexander Payne is one of the credited screenwriters on I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
What the hell is going on here?
But no, we haven't hit the one that I immediately. Okay, the first movie I thought of when I thought we were going to do, you know, thought about this topic was The Bourne Identity. Mm-hmm. The second movie I thought of is Overboard.
That's right.
Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn comedy that is also. It's very much like the. Do you remember that movie Passengers from last year?
Yeah.
Overboard is the Passengers of its day, in that if you apply a second of critical thinking to it, it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, real quick?
Just that I made my list and then I looked at other lists, and Overboard was always near the top, and I was like, I know that David has mentioned it, but because I haven't seen it, I couldn't put it on my list. But everyone says, like, this is the Amnesia movie.
I don't think it's great. It has a lot of great. It has an awesome cast. You've got Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, of course. But you've also got Mike Haggerty is in it.
That's great.
You've got Edward Herman. You've got Roddy McDowall. You've got a great cast.
Yeah.
But it's also so creepy that, like, she's mean to him because she's a rich lady and he's like a carpenter who comes to fix the closet on her yacht or her husband's yacht, Edward Herman's yacht. And she's mean. And then she falls overboard and gets amnesia like you do, I guess. Sure. You fall overboard. And so he tells her, oh, you're my wife. These are your kids. You live here. We're married. And she moves in with him and becomes his wife and takes care of his house and kids and has sex with him. And then gets her memory back and decides to stay with him.
I do feel like it's like, this is Kurt Russell. This is a short con. I got to say the day is going to come when this, when she gets her memory back and then you've got some splaining to do.
There was an episode of, I know the two things I talk about all the time are AV Club and The Best Show.
Sure.
There was an episode of The Best Show where they had a lawyer as a guest and people would call in with the plots of famous movies. And she would say, in the real world, here's what would happen. Some of them are hilarious. Like The School of Rock was like life in prison for like essentially abducting a classroom full of kids. And like, anyway. But I wish I had called in. I never listened live. To bring up Overboard, because I can't, that would have to be life in prison.
Yes,
right?
I think so.
For that kind of fraud.
Probably a certain type of statutory rape, right? Like, I feel like it would qualify.
Yes, there must be. I would hope so. If not, then there ought to be a law.
Because, like, I think it could be argued that she can't give informed consent.
Right.
In that situation.
Yeah. And yet now they're remaking it.
Are they?
Yeah, they're remaking it. They're switching the gender, which is still not okay.
I guess it makes it fine.
It's not. But so Anna Faris is playing the Kurt Russell role, and John Cho is playing the Goldie Hawn role.
I do like both of them.
They're both great actors. And so I'm excited to see if it's any good, but I can't imagine that.
It's
just
too
dumb a premise.
Look, I recognize based on stand-up comedy that men and women are different. But the thing is this. Anytime I've read like an article about like a female teacher who has sex with like a 14-year-old student, which is like, there are always people that just, it's like, oh man, he probably loved it. It's like,
yeah, lucky kid. No.
The comment that you'll read a billion times is like, where were these teachers when I was in school? You know, just over and over again.
They were probably fucking the other kids. Exactly. You loser.
It's like, yeah. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. You're, who's the sucker at the poker game? I can't find him.
Yeah. It's the kids who have some chill that were getting laid by their adult teachers.
But yeah, it's like, it's that casual attitude that like, it's like, oh, this, I mean, obviously this 14-year-old kid who is in no position to say no at all and will absolutely be, is not in the power position in any way and can never get this important thing back.
Right. Yeah.
He's fine. He's probably, it'll turn out fine. Which actually speaks to another Adam Sandler movie. That's My Boy, in which, the fact that like his older teacher, I think played by Susan Sarandon, was it Susan Sarandon? I don't remember.
I never saw it,
but she has sex with him. And then Andy Samberg comes out and like, it is only ever played for laughs, even though she does go to jail, but it's seen as like, he liked it.
Now, you know, the concept we talked about actually with our friend Ellie Davis, the concept of the handshake movie, the movie like if this person doesn't get this movie, then we're not compatible.
Okay.
Right. I don't have one of those and I don't think my wife has one of those, but I think I did pass the overboard test because I had never seen it before my wife showed it to me.
Okay.
Not that I like the movie, but that my wife and I both agree on what the absolute funniest part of the movie is, which is,
I think Goldie Hawn, said it before, but yeah, now I don't recall.
Goldie Hawn has this like dream sequence, and at the end she's spinning and there are sequins falling from the sky. And so she's spinning and she's happy, but she also keeps getting sequins in her mouth. And so she's trying to smile, but she's also like spitting out the little sequins. And I think the fact that I laughed as hard as I did at that, yeah, I think I passed the handshake test for my wife.
I think it would be interesting. We could do an episode on like the handshake test, because I don't think it's a situation where like, it's like if you don't like this, you know what? We can't be friends. It's more likely like if you like this, which no one else I know likes.
Yeah.
There's major potential here.
Yeah.
For example, the Simpsons gag 27.
Which,
do you know
that
one?
No.
Where, Lisa is considering dressing up like a boy so she can go and like learn math, because Springfield Elementary has done some different thing. And so as she's thinking about it, she goes into like this mystical thing where there's all these like math symbols like floating around her head, and then there's like a greater than or equal to sign and goes, do it, Lisa, you'll be greater than or equal to boys. And then the number 8 says, even though you're only 8, your potential will be, and then it turns infinite. And then a 27 just comes along and the music kind of fades out and just goes, 27. And it's Hank Azaria doing that ridiculous and almost Ed Wynn type voice.
Yeah.
That to me is maybe the funniest Simpsons gag ever.
Oh, this actually just at the last time my wife and I went to see Wonder. And there were like the commercials and there were previews, mm-hmm, and like the lights dimmed a little, and in between the previews and the movies, there's a pre-recorded announcement that for some reason the speaker, or at least that track, was like corrupted and it sounded like a subway announcement, like, thank you for choosing the service. And we were like, we started the movie just in tears because we were both laughing so hard. No, like I said, a pretty full theater. No one else seemed to think this is as funny as we did.
Just some usher in the back.
Yeah.
Don't forget to go to concession stand. All right.
Okay. All right. We're almost at an hour here, so we can move things along. But okay. I want to see if there's any more comedies here. Well, here's one. Okay, movie from my youth, or at least my teenage years, that I love. That's also an amnesia-ish story. Is Desperately Seeking Susan,
I've not seen.
I really think you should see, even though it has Will Patton in it as one of the...
Maybe that's my handshake.
Yeah. He's one of... I guess he's the villain, or maybe he's like the... Like the underboss in villain in video game terms.
Interesting.
I
can't remember. What are the odds?
Premise involves amnesia, and that Rosanna Arquette is sort of a bored suburban housewife who... there's this couple that... that communicate through the what are they called? The not WANADs. What is it called? Like misconnections,
classifieds,
or classifieds, whatever. Yeah. And she's like it's a real life thing, and she follows them as if it's like a soap opera or whatever. Hmm. And then she goes into the city one day and she, whatever, gets conked in the head or whatever it is, yeah. And becomes convinced that she is this woman that she's like only known through this woman, Susan, that she's known only through these newspaper ads. Hmm. And the real Susan is played by Madonna. Okay. Yeah, it's such a great movie. I love it so much. But I guess it explores the sort of disconnect between who we are and who we want to be in obvious ways that I just laid out, you know, and uses amnesia as a sort of playground. Sorry, you had a big reaction there. You should really see this movie.
Yeah, sorry. I was put in mind of another movie that I'm not sure if it counts as amnesia, okay. But it might. But before I do that, a moment ago I made a joke about not remembering. That was not an amnesia joke. That's about the forgettable quality of Will Patton. That's what that joke was meant to be. It occurred to me only afterwards that, like, yeah. Oh, we're talking about not remembering.
I've known you long enough to know that's what you meant. Right. But yeah, I understand.
I would have been ashamed if I'd made that an amnesia joke. Nurse Betty.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if it counts.
But it's very similar to Desperately Seeking Susan in that way. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good movie, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. I remember it being a good movie. It's really weird.
It is weird.
In tone.
It's Neil LaBute, and it is appropriately misanthropic, I'd say.
But it's also, like, sometimes it's like a fairy tale.
Sometimes, yes.
But yes, it also involves dudes getting scalped.
Yeah. And, like, and then it turns out that Morgan Freeman and Chris Rock are, like, father and son.
And then
when Chris Rock is getting like mowed down by the cops and it's like there's blood coming out of his mouth and he's screaming like daddy, it's like, what? I was watching a comedy a moment ago.
Yeah.
But I kind of love it.
But it has the great when they're after, I know this is, I think, your favorite line too.
Yeah.
When Chris Rock gets the report of there's someone matching Betty's description, mm-hmm. and he mentions height and like brown hair, yeah. or whatever. And Morgan Freeman's like, what about grace? Do they say anything about poise?
Yeah. Although I do enjoy Chris Rock when he talks about how he doesn't care who this woman is. He will, like, I will kill that bitch like she scratched my car. But I have a hard time fully saying that's amnesia. It's more that she hits her head or whatever it is. No, it's traumatic. She witnesses her husband being killed and it causes like a psychological break and she thinks she is somebody she is not. And has no memory of who she is, but it's replaced with something. It's mm-hmm. not just a complete absence.
Yeah.
I gotta see Nurse Betty. I haven't seen that since you and I saw it in the theater in Springfield, yeah. Missouri.
I think I watched it once since then, but yeah, it's for a comedy, it's not an easy sit. It's because it's, yeah, Neil LaBute.
You see someone get scalped.
Yeah, like right up top.
Yeah.
I mean, which is, not where they
scalp. Watch out.
I mean, at the top of the movie.
So I will say that there's, you know, we were talking about like action and sci-fi and all that, and these will fit into that as well, but there can also be a real tragic quality and a real disturbing quality to like amnesia films. I would say Shutter Island is a big one.
That's on my list. Yeah.
Where that also is a situation where he thinks he's someone he's not, but it does seem to come first from his mind is blocked out. Huge swaths of things.
Yeah.
And so,
but as soon, now I haven't watched the whole thing in a while. I told you I watched the first 40 minutes
right
recently, but is who he thinks he is based on who he was? Was he a cop after being a soldier?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I've seen it twice and it's been a while since I saw it the second time. I apologize, but no, I don't think it's that.
Okay.
It might be, but these circumstances are definitely not that. And you know, his situation with his, you know, the tragedy of his wife and like that image, which featured into the trailer of him, like holding her mm-hmm. as she just turns to ash and he's crying. Like, it's a really dramatic moment. And I think a really solid bit of acting from DiCaprio. But I would also say Dark City.
Oh, that's on my list too. Yeah.
Is one that like, you know, you don't get much more sci-fi than just collective amnesia caused by aliens who are just going to reconstruct you every single day. 'Cause they want to try and figure out the essence of humanity. And not unlike Blade Runner, they discover this, like, it's not purely about your memories. There's something deeper than that. But I remember there being a moment that I find particularly effective, in which I think Rufus Sewell is saying to William Hurt, like, when's the last time you remember doing something during the day? He's like, and I don't mean a distant memory. I mean, like, yesterday. And it's not as though I, as a viewer, I'm like, yeah, that is weird. Cause like, I don't live here. I'm just seeing what the film shows me, but it's just this neat idea that like memory can be so deceptive that, well, I know that this thing exists. I know that daytime exists and I have this memory of when it happened. And it's like, let's get a bit more specific and really bear down on this one thing that happened recently, and you can't. And I find that fascinating. And it's in Memento is like that as well, where he can remember everything up to a certain point, and his wife could have died 3 years ago or 2 months ago. Like, mm-hmm. You don't really know. And that's the real hell of it, is that once you don't remember things, you know, it is the tragedy of, like, you know, my grandfather passed away of Alzheimer's, and it's a very sad thing to witness. And even though his decline was pretty quick, like from diagnosis to death, it was like 8 months. It was a very sad thing to see, because he was like a very sharp guy, and just to see things fall away, but not everything. So like, he's on firm enough ground with certain things that he would want to like mentally like reach out for this other thing, but there's just nothing to grab onto. And like, it sounds horrifying to me. And I feel like every once in a while, movies like this will really capture the terror that would come with that.
All right. Well, I feel bad going from that into anything else on my list, because nothing else is that serious.
That's fine.
But this reminded me of a movie that is very bad, but it's like reverse amnesia. There's a sci-fi horror movie called The Forgotten with Julianne Moore and I think Dominic West, in which she's the only one who remembers that she had two children.
Ooh,
that are gone.
I like that. I like that as a concept.
Yeah, it's not a very good movie.
That's like Flight in a certain way.
I never saw Flight,
but that's more of like a general kind of gaslighting type of situation.
Right.
It's not a bad movie, Flight.
Going back to our movie journal, apparently Larry Cohen did uncredited rewrites on Flight.
A lot of people did rewrites on Flight. Like Billy Ray was on there. Like, really? Good writers.
Carrie Fisher, maybe.
Who knows?
Carrie Fisher did so many uncredited rewrites that we'll never know about.
I know, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to see what
we should wrap up. It's been over an hour. I'm trying to think if there are any major ones that I left off here that I had wanted to talk about. You mentioned Eternal Sunshine. Thank God. I briefly mentioned The Hangover. It's mostly just used as a, I think, a pretty clever sort of plot device. In The Hangover, there's RoboCop.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, right.
Why did that not occur to me? I'm looking at Total Recall right here. That's how stupid of me.
And then there's I guess The Manchurian Candidate in a way, because that's a brainwashing movie, so I'm not sure if that counts, but memories are brainwashed away from him.
It's no different, I think, than Dark City, like just people like fucking with his mind so that he doesn't remember entire very important moments of his life.
And then the big one that I was saving for near the end is Mulholland Drive.
Which I have not seen in a long time, and I was just like, is that an amnesia? I mean, enough sites said that it was an amnesia movie. And I was like, is it amnesia, or does everything just change halfway through? I don't remember.
Both.
Okay.
Cause the initial, that's how Naomi Watts and, what's her name? Laura Herring, the other lead in the movie.
Yeah, I can't remember her.
I think Rita is the character's name. Maybe? I think
that sounds right.
Cause you know, it starts, there's a car crash.
Yeah.
Like a limo crashes or whatever.
And then Brent Briscoe says, like, I think somebody's missing.
I don't remember that. Yeah. But then you get to Naomi Watts' story, and then she meets the woman, and it turns out she was the woman in the car crash, but she does, because of the crash or whatever, she doesn't remember who she is. And so she, like, moves in with Naomi Watts, and they try to find out who she is, and then they become lovers, and then everything changes halfway through.
And don't drink all the Coke. I remember that. You want to talk about a movie that like mimics a dream state, you know, that so much of it seems so straightforward and then just everything changes completely, which is something that happens regularly in my dreams. And it's, and it doesn't frustrate me in the moment. It's only afterwards. I'm like, that makes no sense at all. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This is getting away from memory, but, two TV shows, we talked to this on the podcast before, but TV shows that did dream sequences really well are Buffy the Vampire Slayer and The Sopranos.
Sopranos, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bringing John Hurd back seasons later as not him.
Yeah, yeah.
Is like a stroke of genius.
And Annette Bening as herself. Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you Annette Bening? But that's like... I've had instances where I was in a play at Ponderosa High School in Denver, and then I go into the green room and Jack Nicholson's just sitting there, uh-huh. and it's 5 minutes between my next scene. I sit there and I was like, so how do you think the play is going? He's like, it's really good. I said, it's kind of embarrassing to say this, but I'm a big fan. and I woke up, I was like, no, I didn't meet Jack Nicholson. What a bummer.
I was just thinking about The Sopranos today because, do you know thetakeout.com?
No.
Okay. You know avclub.com?
Yes. I've heard of it.
For a while, they had a food subsection called Supper Club.
Okay.
They spun that off into its own website. It's called thetakeout.com. Anyway, there was an article about how often dress codes in restaurants are enforced along sort of racial lines if a restaurant has a no sneakers policy, it's more likely to be enforced on a young black man than a middle-aged white man. Anyway, they're talking about dress codes.
Is it also an age thing? I could see it being.
Oh, it could be.
Well.
Yeah. So it was a very interesting article, but it also got me thinking of one of my favorite scenes in Sopranos history when he and Artie are at a nice restaurant and there's a guy, who is played by an actor who looks like Peter Berg, but I don't think it's Peter Berg, okay. who's wearing a baseball cap indoors. And, Tony walks over and tells him, take your hat off. They don't sell hot dogs here. They took the bleachers out 2 years ago. And the guy says, it's my hat. I'll wear it if I want. And Tony just stares at him and then he takes the hat off and he goes back and the waiter pours an extra glass of wine and is like, thank you.
So before we're done, obviously, I do feel like Mulholland Drive is the one that we should have ended on. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say about it.
I do think that 12 Monkeys has an amnesia situation,
right? I thought about that. I guess it does.
It does. Like, there are flashes. It's not... I don't think it's full amnesia. It's like he comes armed with certain things in his mind, but not everything. But it's been a while since I've seen it, so I don't remember exactly.
Because I thought about putting that on my list, and I feel like the idea is more that you tend to forget stuff that happened when you were a kid.
Sure.
And that's to me, the main crux of the thing is a memory that it's not amnesia so much as it's a memory that he just has forgotten until he faces it again as an adult.
I guess that's true. Yeah. He probably remembers it about as well as I remember anything from that age, even
from
something, even something big like that. And then a film that is not that good, but is absolutely Regarding Henry. Did you ever see that?
I've never seen it. He gets shot at the beginning. Is that right?
Yeah. By John Leguizamo. He playing himself. It's very strange, but obviously that's not true. So yeah, he's this, asshole lawyer. It's a little bit too black and white, but he's this asshole lawyer who's been, cheating on his wife, played by Annette Bening. And, he goes to buy a pack of cigarettes and walks into a store that is being robbed and then is shot in the head and in the shoulder and he's saved. But he this is not amnesia. His memories are not going to come back.
Okay.
Because he has actual damage in his brain now. But he has to. So in some cases, he's being reintroduced to these things that he liked before, but he's also kind of becoming a new person. He's learning how to talk again and all that. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is there's a moment when his wife at the breakfast table is like, would you like some eggs? And he goes, I don't think so. And she's like, oh, but you love eggs. And he's like, oh, all right, then give me a lot of eggs. But then it turns out, I don't like eggs at all. And it's just this, it's him learning to be a new person. And of course the idea is being a better person. But it does bring this other element in, which is his wife is suddenly married to a different person. Now, she was married to an asshole, which is not great, but it's all like that has always stayed with me, that like you hear these stories about like some in some construction accident, some guy gets like a rod shoved through his brain and it changes his personality completely. And I thought, like, good God, what if that happened to me or to Jen? And suddenly I am married to someone that I never agreed to marry. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
That's rough. Rough stuff.
That reminds me, this is not a movie. This is, I generally avoid listening to true crime podcasts because true crime kind of creeps me out.
Yeah.
But I did listen to one that was really interesting. This wasn't like a serial type. It was just one episode of a podcast. That was a story. There was a couple. They were both very serious alcoholics and like obviously codependent enablers for each other. Mm. And then and one night while they were both blackout drunk, she killed him. She shot him in the head.
Oh my.
And the podcast was about what happened, like the physiology, what happens when you get blackout drunk. Because yeah. People keep thinking like, well, you were drunk. It's fuzzy, but like they assume you're still you. You did this thing. You're not brain damaged. You must have the memory in you somewhere. It just needs to be accessed. But that's not how it works. When you're when you get to that level of drunkenness, it's the comparison that the podcast host made was like shutting off your computer without saving what you wrote. Hmm. You wrote it as yourself.
Yeah.
You know you did it.
Yeah.
You know, you were yourself when you did it, but the memory is completely gone and it is not retrievable.
Yeah.
And that's so crazy to me that this woman, like, she knows that she shot her husband in the head, but she will never, ever be able to access the memory of when or why she did that.
And it's not a situation where she'd been wanting to for a while and right. then got so drunk that she did and just didn't remember the act. It's literally like, even the motivation was gone.
Yeah, everything Ugh. Was. Yeah, it was a really interesting.
It sounds. Podcast. Everything is depressing or terrifying to me at this point in my life. But yeah.
Welcome to middle age. I think if we're being realistic, we're probably middle aged. I think people save middle age like their 50s. But come on, we're middle aged.
I think. Well, you know, not to get too morbid, but my dad died at 50, so I'm like, my brother and I both. Even though like he's actually very healthy and I try to be, and like I get my cholesterol checked and all that just to make sure I don't die of a heart attack and all that.
Yeah.
We both do just kind of have this feeling. It's like, if we get to 51 from then on, it's like, it could happen at any moment. I know that's not super logical
because you're right. I'm not trying to one up my, because my dad was 45.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
10 years older than I am now.
Yeah. You only got 10 good years. All right, I got 15.
Better drink up.
So, who am I going to host the show with for that 5 years? that really turned dark. Sorry.
Yeah, that's everybody. A good place to end it. You can find us at battleshippotential.com. That's where you can find premium content.
That's right.
Always helps us. We got Sundance coming up. We're going to need some funds for that, for air travel and getting around and stuff. I hope to bring you guys some great Sundance content. And we don't ask for donations. We're asking you to purchase, again, content. Mm-hmm. We recorded entertaining stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
I think so.
So it's the premium, you can find all the premium stuff on the website. You can also, find reviews and all of the sorts of stuff like I talked about earlier on the show at battleshippretension.com. You can email us at david@battleshippretension.com or tyler@battleshippretension.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter @DavyPretension. I always say me, David, because I realize there are a number of podcasts that I listen to and have listened to for a long time where I'm not entirely sure which host is with. It's like, especially if it's two like guys like us.
Yeah. People have said that to me, like listeners said, like, I can't always keep you straight. And of course, to me, it's like, one of us is, Mumbly Joe and the other is super dynamic.
Right.
So it's super clear to me, but whatever.
Unlike my speech, it's super clear to you. So you can, I'm at Davey Pretension. Tyler's at Tyler Pretension. Tyler, your other podcast is called More Than One Lesson.
Yes. And it is on hold right now,
but there's still a website
and there's still stuff being posted. There is a, There's The Fear of God, which is a podcast under our umbrella. There's a new one called Two Geek Soup, in which this guy, John, and that's the one that I guested on, I mentioned during the movie journal. He's not merely talking about like film from a Christian perspective. He's talking about just like all things pop culture. And he does a thing that I really love where like at the end of every episode, he's like, all right, let's get some good news. So like he finds like a news story that's very inspiring. It's like, okay, we're ending on that. Good things can happen in this world. Moving on.
That's very nice.
I like that a lot. And so he's doing a thing that others are doing where he's covering every Marvel film and he will be finishing right in time for Infinity War in May.
Yeah. Okay. So Black Panther's before that. Black Panther's February?
February, yeah. And I think that'll be the last one they cover. So you can find that at morethanonelesson.com.
All right. Anything else?
No.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Let's make 2018 great. Let's be politically active. And
compassionate. Let's try that. Let's all treat each other like people.
That's a good point of view.
It sounds
yes.
good.
Yes. All right. So let's do that in 2018. New Year's resolution. Be compassionate.
Be human beings for once in your fucking life.
Thanks for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.